Shalom and Happy Hanukkah and Good Chodesh. Today we're here to discuss the Jewish coinage throughout the ages. We'll start as early as possible. What we know, as usual, we try to blend the Makoros with the archaeological finds and try to understand and make the things match. The truth of the matter is, we'll start from the earliest ideas of coins that we know. And scientifically, the first minted coins were done in Greece, in the Greek Isles, in the 6th century BCE. On the other hand, the Gemara tells us in Bava Kamma Daf Tzadik Zayin. Now, if you look on the Hebrew source page, which I hope has been posted, number 7, a quote from the Gemara in Bava Kamma Daf Tzadik Zayin. The Gemara says like this, Tzad Rabbanah. איזה מטבע של ירושלים דבר שלמה מצד אחד וירושלים מהקודש מצד אחר. What's the מטבע, what's the coin of ירושלים? דבר שלמה on one side and ירושלים מהקודש on the other side. ואיזה מטבע של אברהם אבינו, and what's the מטבע of אברהם אבינו? זוקן וזקנה מצד אחד, the זוקן וזקנה, an elderly man and woman on one side, וברוך ובסולה מצד אחר, and a young man and woman on the other side, which Rashi says is the Zaken and the Zaken is Avraham and Sarah, and the Baruch and Basula is Yitzchak and Rivka. So Gemara seems to be saying here that in the days of Avraham Avinu they had coins, and the days of David HaMelech they had coins, while in the scientific world coins do not exist, as I said, until the middle of the 6th century BCE, maybe 7th century, which means in the middle of the first Beis HaMikdash period. So how do we reconcile the two? Interestingly, Tosfos already there in Bava Kamma has a question. The Gemara says over here that the Matbeah of Yerushalayim has David and Shlomo on one side and Yerushalayim Meir Kodesh on the other. Matbeah of Avraham Avinu has Avraham and Sarah and Yitzchak and Rivka. So Tosfos asks the question. Tosfos says, how was it permitted to put images of people on the coins? We know you're not allowed to have images on the coins. Losa Soniti, Losa Senosi, you're not allowed to make an image of a human being. And how could David and Shlomo and Avraham Avinu have coins where it had their image on when you're not allowed to make an image of a human being? So Tosfos says that it didn't really have an image of David and Shlomo, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Rivka, but rather it said the names. In other words, it said Avraham and Sarah, it said Yitzchak and Rivka, it said David and Shlomo, but it didn't really have an image, and Tosfos backs it up because Rashi also says that Lashon over there that it said, but it wasn't really the actual image. That's what Tosfos says. This may be the clue in understanding how this reference to coins before, as we said, the middle of 7th century BCE, while Chacham referred to Matbea. In other words, before coins were minted, and this invention began in the Greek islands, the Aegean Sea, before coins were minted, people used pieces of silver. Pieces of silver that were cut to size and shape, and on it it had the name of the one shekel, two shekels, four shekel, etc. None of this has been found in archaeology. We don't have any such coins or any such pieces of silver from the first Beis HaMikdash, but the pieces of silver were not minted into coins like we know them today. This, as we said, was a Greek invention. One of the things that bothered me for years was, if there's no coins, we know that when a person has Maaser Sheni, which is supposed to bring to Yerushalayim, and if he can't afford to bring it to Yerushalayim because it's too heavy, so he redeems it on currency, and then he takes the currency and brings that to Yerushalayim. The din is, the pasuk says, "V'tzarta kesef b'yadcha." Currency has got to have kesef tzura. It's got to have an image. And the Gemara says, for example, that an asimon is no good. What's an asimon? An asimon is a coin that does not have any image on it. Before they made the coins, they molded them. And if you just have a molded piece of silver or copper or bronze or whatever, and you don't, there's no image on it, then that is not valid currency to before the Maaser Sheni. So the question that bothered me for years was that if so, that there were actually no coins in the days of the first Beis HaMikdash, and then there was no way of redeeming Maaser Sheni in the days of the first Beis HaMikdash. But Baruch Hashem, to everything there's a solution. And I think the key is this Tosus over here. Tosus says it didn't really have an image, but it wrote on it. It was written. It was an inscription that said Avraham Mitzar Yitzchak Nefka David Hashem. It's an inscription. So there's the answer. The Rambam says that Kesef Tzura is not only an image. The Rambam Nichus Ma'aseh Sheni. The Rambam says that Ksav is also considered Kesef Tzura, which means if you have a piece of silver and it says that this piece of silver is 1 shekel or 2 shekels, then that's good enough. It's not an asimon. An asimon is a molded coin without anything written or any image on it. Blank. That's an asimon. That you cannot be quoted. That's not Kesef Tzura. But if it's said in 1 shekel or 2 shekels or 4 shekels, then that is considered Kesef Tzura. And that's probably the answer how in the first place of Migdash they used silver or copper, etc., for coins. Now let's differentiate the different types of coins. The prutot were made out of copper. In modern science, it was called bronze. Bronze is actually a mixture of copper and tin. 97% copper, 3% tin. Copper is a soft metal, and therefore it's mixed with tin, and that's called bronze. In Chazal, we refer to it as nechoshes. It's always referred to as nechoshes, that 3% tin don't play a role. So nechoshes can be, in a scientific translation, will be bronze, but in the Torah will be referred to as nechoshes, even though they mixed it with something. So you have the prutot that were made from bronze, you have silver coins, and you have gold coins. As we know from the Gemara, in the beginning of the fourth parak in Bat Metzia, as Rav Konos HaKesef, the real coinage was the silver coins. Gold coins were very rare. People stored them. It was more of a commodity and not a currency. People held on to them, but it wasn't a thing that was going in, that was commonly used. The silver coins was actually what was basically used. And then you had the copper, which the prutot, which were, again, they added up. You need a lot of them to add up to 1 shekel or whatever. That was a small change. Paper money, of course, didn't exist in those days. Just about the history of paper money. Paper money began, if I remember correctly, in the 1860s in the Civil War in the United States when the government didn't have money to pay. So the government basically wrote the paper money as a promissory note. When the war will be over, we'll pay you. It was more of a start. Today, of course, the paper money became a thing in itself. No one expects to go to the government and get any metal for it or any value for it. The paper itself has the value. But in those days, it was a star. And from there, there's a whole discussion in the poskim, what is the halachic value, what is the halachic way to discuss paper money today? Is it considered a star or is it actually considered kesef? That could be an afkamina for being poor then, or etc. If it's considered money, then it's not a problem. But if it's not considered money, then it's a star. You cannot be poor with stars. Okay, what was the weight of the shekels during the first Beis HaMikdash? As I said, no coinage, no pieces of silver have been found from the days of first Beis HaMikdash. But we do have a set of weights. Not only one set, there are plenty sets of weights that were found in archaeological digs throughout Eretz Yisrael. And on it, it has, exactly, it says 1 shekel, 2 shekel, 4 shekel, and a half a shekel, and a quarter shekel, etc. So we do know the weight of the shekel from the first Beis HaMikdash based on the stone weights. And usually all the stone weights conform to, being in the metric system, we're talking about grams, I think it's 11.2 or 11.4 grams. That's what the shekel weighs in the first Beis HaMikdash. That's important for us to remember because we have a little surprise waiting for us when we get to the shekel coins of the second Beis HaMikdash. So in the first Beis HaMikdash, all we have is pieces of silver. Avraham Avinu, when he weighs the shekel to Ephron, he weighs pieces of silver. But what size? So I told you, shekel in the first Beis HaMikdash, for example, are 11 grams. We know the Babylonian shekel at that time was only 8 grams. Each place had a different size shekel, and Avraham Avinu, when he weighed the coins, he gave the largest size of the coins. That's Chadovah Lasocha, the largest size, meaning if the country, the richest country, they had a big shekel of 20 grams, so he paid him in coins of 20 grams of silver. That's Chadovah Lasocha. Let's continue. The first place of Midrash is destroyed by the Bavlim, and the Bavlim are defeated by the Persians. And that's the time actually that the first coins begin to appear in Eretz Yisrael. We have a website, put up the thing. We have a website, it's not our website, there's a website called thejerusalemcoins.com. In the website there's a whole tour of coins. second. You go into the Torah, you begin with the Persian era, and in the Persian era there's a bunch of coins that are can be seen over here. The Persian Malchus, the Persian Empire, was divided up, we know, 127 Medinos, and the Medinos were grouped in Pachavot, or satraps in English. There's a major discrepancy in between Chazal and the scientific world on the Persian period, how long it lasted. We're not going to go into this in depth because that really requires a shiur in itself, but it's important for us to know because it does have connections to the coins that were found. According to Chazal, and I quoted over here on the Hebrew source page number 3 for Gemara and Avodah Zarah, and that's important for us to remember because it also ties into Hanukkah. Vatani Rav Yossi Berebi Malchus Paras Bifnavai Shloshim V'Arba Shana. The Gemara says that the second Beis Hamikdash stood for 420 years. Of it, 34 years was the Persian rule. Malchus Yavon Bifnavai Shmeo Shmonim Shana. The Greek control of Eretz Yisrael was 180 years. Malchus Chashmonai Bifnavai Shmeo Shalosh. The Chashmonaim for 103 years. Malchus Beis Hardas Shmeo Shalosh. If we add that all up, we get exactly 420. So we have 34 years for the Persians, 180 for the Greeks, 103 for the Chashmonaim, 103 for Beis Hardas. Since we're in Hanukkah, so we will mention one thing. The Rambam in Hilchos Hanukkah mentions that the Nes of Hanukkah enabled the Chazar Malchus of Yisrael, Yeshua Masayim Shana, Avichorban Abayis Hashem. The Rambam says that the Malchus came, was restored to Klal Yisrael for more than 200 years as a result of the Chashmonai revolt against the Greeks. The Malchus was restored for a total of 200 years plus. Clearly, the Rambam is referring to this Gemara where he considers the Malchus Beis Chashmonai 103 years and Malchus Beis Hardas another 103 years, a total of 206 years. It's a big chiddush the way the Rambam defines Malchus Beis Hardas as Malchus Yisrael. We're not going to expound on that. Even Malchus Beis Hardas didn't exactly rule that entire time, but okay, we could somewhat squeeze it, maybe not in Yehuda, but in other countries, other parts of the country, yes, we could somewhat squeeze in why the Gemara calls it Malchus Beis Hardas. But as a total, we have 206 years of Jewish rule, 180 Malchus Yavon, Malchus Paras 34 years. In scientific, in any scientific book that you'll open, you'll see that they add another 165 years to the second Beis Hamikdash, and they expand the Malchus Paras. They expand the Malchus Paras by another 165 years. Although science claims, although that this is absolute and there's nothing to change about it, there's a lot to be said about this. The evidence is not clear in Bechlau in the direction. There's a lot of evidence in Eretz Yisrael. Otherwise, again, that's way beyond the scope of this year. But we have over here Malchus Paras Bifnei Abayis Shloshim V'Arba Shana. That for 34 years, the Persians were in the were controlling Eretz Yisrael when the Beis Hamikdash was built. But let's not forget that north of Yehuda, there were the Shamanim or the Samaritans. And they were there before Bnei Yisrael came back and built the Beis Hamikdash. So in other words, they're sitting there already a much longer time. And indeed, in excavations at the Mahar Gizim, which is where the Shamanim worship and where they had a Beis Hamikdash, a lot of Persian coins were found. Some that were minted locally in the area of Shamron. In Yehuda, they also minted coins. Now, if you go into that website with Jerusalem coins, which I mentioned, you go into the Torah and you go into the Persian site, there's a coin over here which has a bird on one side and a beautiful flower on the other side, and this is a coin which has an inscription on it, and the inscription on it says Yahad. Yahad comes from the word Judea. And the second Beis Hamikdash, Eretz Yisrael is divided up into four. Eretz Yisrael is divided up into, we can say, four parts. We have Yehuda, we have Shomron, we have Galil, and we have Eber HaYarden. So Yahad is reflecting on Yehuda, and is reflecting on Yehuda. If we have an Israeli shekel coin today, the Israeli shekel coins are exact replica of, I'm holding one up over here, our exact replica of an exact replica of this Persian coin. Now Israeli, okay, as you see it, Israeli coins, almost all of them are replicas of ancient coins, and this is one of the earliest Jewish coins. It says Emes Yehad. It was minted by the local governor under the Jewish in other words, it was minted under the Persian control by the local governor, probably minted in Yerushalayim. So this is like the, we can say this is the earliest Jewish coin. Today it serves as a shekel. On it there's an inscription which says the words Yud Hei Dalet, which stands for Yehuda. So this is the earliest Jewish coin. Another very interesting coin from the Persian period carries a name, and the name is Yadua, Yud Dalet Vav Ayin. Who is this Yadua? So if we take a look in Nehemiah was in the time of the Persian government when the Beit HaMikdash was built, and in Perek Yud Beis it lists the name of the Kohanim Gedolim. Yehoshua Alidus Yehoyakim, Yehoyakim Alidus Eliashiv, Eliashiv is Yehoyada, Yehoyada Alidus Yonasan, Yonasan Alid Es Yadua. So it lists the Kohanim Gedolim, and Yadua is the last one to appear in this list in Sefer Nehemiah. Now, Sefer Nehemiah does not continue after the Persian government was defeated by the Greeks, which we'll talk about in a moment. And Yadua is the last Kohen Gadol who appears over here. Who is this Yadua? What else was he famous for? Shortly after the Persian Persian Empire was defeated by none other than Alexander the Great, in the year 323 BCE, he captured the Persepolis, which was the big Persian palace in Persia, the capital, and then later on he went on his conquest. He came all along the coast. He captured Eretz Yisrael, and from there he captured Egypt. We have a very interesting story in the Gemara in Yoma. That's Samchtes, and you can find that on the Hebrew source page on number 2. The Gemara tells a story like this, and I'm not going to read the entire story, but we'll get to the main point. The 25th of Teves is a special celebration, which is mentioned in Megillah Sinus, the day of Hagrizim. The Lola Mispat, it's a day you're not allowed to have a eulogy. Why? Yom Shabikshu Kusim is Vesel Kainim Alexandros Mogdon Lachrivo Venosno Lahem. The day that the Kusim, the Samaritans who are on Hagrizim, asked permission from Alexander the Great to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Now let's remember, the Jews were very loyal to the Persian government, and the Persian government was probably the best empire that ever controlled the Jewish people. I was just recently in London at a special exhibit from the Persian Empire, and an Iranian came over to me and he asked me, is it true that the Jews have a lot of respect for Koresh, for what he did? I said, not only for Koresh, but for all the Persian kings, the Yavash, etc., for all the empires that controlled the Jewish people, the one empire that was good to the Jewish people were the Persians. So the Jews were very loyal to the Persians, and when Alexander the Great came, they didn't want to give him support, while the Samaritans gave support to Alexander the Great. And when Alexander the Great was victorious and he defeated the Persians, so then they wanted to take revenge from the Jews, the Samaritans, and they begged from Alexander permission, Alexander Macedonian, Alexander Macedonia, Alexander the Great, they begged him permission to destroy the Beis HaMikdash for nothing left. And he gave Shimon HaTzadik. They came and told Shimon HaTzadik the story, and I'm not going to read the whole story here because time is really, really short, as usual now. And it tells the story that Shimon HaTzadik got dressed up with big day kahuna, and he walked an entire night towards the coast. When he reached a place called Antipatris, which is today modern Russia Ayin, they actually Alexander the Great saw the Kohen Gadol, and when he saw that, he dismounted from his horse and he bowed down to Shimon HaTzadik. So they told him, his servants said to him, they said, a great king like you, Alexander, you bow down to someone? How do you bow down to this person? So he told them, this image is what makes me victorious in my wars. Explained that he used to see this image before he was victorious in a war. A Rabbi of Yashua Slita said, another possibility could be, we know the Kohen Gadol is basically the highest neshama that there is. And Alexander the Great is going around all his life. And what's he doing? He wants to be the greatest that there is. And all of a sudden, what does he see? He sees Shimon HaTzadik. He sees this is the real greatness. In other words, what you conquer, lands and whatever, that's nothing. You conquer, you win some, you lose some, whatever. But the real godless, the perfection, is here, the current goal of Shimon HaTzadik that he sees. So then he asked him, why did you come? So he told him, is it possible that a place that they daven for you, that you shouldn't be destroyed? You'll let him destroy it. You'll let the Kutzim destroy it. So when he heard that, he changed his decree, and he let the Jews destroy the Mikdash that was in Hagrisim. So this is a very interesting story, because there are those, who is Shimon HaTzadik? Shimon HaTzadik is Mishiori Knesset HaGedolah. He is the remnant of Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Anshei Knesset HaGedolah were 120 people at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, including Ezra, Nehemiah, Mordechai, among others. And Shimon HaTzadik, it says in the beginning of the Perkeles, he was Mishiori Knesset HaGedolah. He was the remnant. So in other words, he's right after the period of Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. And if we count the names in Ezra, all these names that are listed here, it does come out somewhat to 120 names. So in other words, it seems to be listing the names of all Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, and then Shimon HaTzadik is the remnant. So there are those that suggest that this Yadua over here, who appears, is none other than Shimon HaTzadik. We know from Josephus that the Kohen Gadol by the name of Yadua was the one who was around in the time of Alexander the Great when he captured Eretz Yisrael. So the fact that he has another name shouldn't surprise us. It's not really that shocking that he has another name. Someone suggests that Yadua is indeed Shimon HaTzadik, and if so, so then we have a coin actually that was the honor of the Kohen Gadol, who at the time was the leader of the Jewish people. That's the Persian coin by Yadua. Okay, so that coin is obviously the end. And by the way, just to mention to you then, and that the scientific chronology, which adds another 165 years, has a big problem in putting this Yadua at the beginning, in the middle of the Persian period, and putting him at the end of the Persian period. And likewise, a person named Sanballat, who's the head of the Sharmanim, he appears in the middle of the Persian period, and then archaeology appears at the end of the Persian period. So of course, problems are very easily solved. Anytime they find the same name that appears two, three times, this is Yadua the first, this is Yadua the second, this is Yadua the third, and that's how the problem is solved. But as I said, science also has its difficulty with their time schedule. It's not like they have it etched in stone that they can solve all the problems. Okay, let's continue on. The Alexander the Great captures Eretz Yisrael, and we have Alexander the Great on the website. Choose some coins. Over here we see some pictures of him. Most of the pictures, the second coin over there, by the way, is one of the most beautiful coins of Alexander the Great. As I mentioned, he captured Eretz Yisrael, but he didn't live long. He went to Babel and he died suddenly at the age of 34, and was brought to Alexandria for burial. When he died, he divided up his empire into three, or maybe even four, different generals who took the empire. Now, the center of these, we had the Ptolemies, who ruled in Egypt, and the Seleucids, who ruled in Syria, and the capital was Antioch, and from there we get the name Antiochus. So the Ptolemies are in Egypt. If we go now to those coins with the Ptolemies, let's go to the page of the Ptolemy rules on that Jerusalem coins website. And there was the first Ptolemy who... So let's see what happens now. The Assyrians centered Antioch, as we mentioned, northern Syria, while the Egyptian Greeks are in Alexandria. And Eretz Yisrael's wham smack in the middle. For the next 100 years, the Ptolemies and Seleucids will go to war against each other. Oh, and Eretz Yisrael will be wham smack in the middle. At first, the Ptolemies controlled Eretz Yisrael until about the year 200 BCE. Then they lost it to the Seleucids, who captured it in a battle in Panion, which is believed to be Banias in northern Eretz Yisrael today. And from then on, they were under Seleucid rule. Okay, we have a coin over here, a very interesting coin. Coin number two is a person by the name of Ptolemy Philadelphus. Ptolemy Philadelphus ruled from the year 285 BCE to the year 246 BCE, and his coins were also found in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, is going to also, the Ptolemy coins found in Eretz Yisrael are believed to be from his period. It's very hard to say because when it says the name Ptolemy, you'll never know if it's Ptolemy the first or Ptolemy the second. It's a lot of guesswork to piece together based on one or two words how these things fit together. But Yaakov Sharer, who was the expert on all Jewish coinage, and this is the book I'm looking at over here, Otamat Bota Yudin, which is also available in English by Yaakov Sharer. He was the top expert on Jewish coinage. Just to mention, he was always a very helpful person. I never met him in person, but often I called him on the phone to ask him questions about coins and stuff like that, and he always, with lots of patience, would help me and tell me where I could find the information. He always had it at his fingertips. So we have coins that were minted also by King by Ptolemy. We don't know which one it is. But according to him, he believes that this is Ptolemy, the second Ptolemy Philadelphus. The first Ptolemy was very cruel to the Jews. He captured Eretz Yisrael. He exiled a lot of Jews to the tribe. The second Ptolemy was a whole different story. And for that, we have on our Hebrew source page over here, number one, a Gemara in Megillah. Sorry, it's a Gemara in Megillah. The Gemara says like this, that you can write Sfarim, it's a machlokas, whether you can write it Sefer Torah, whether you can write it other than Lashon HaKodesh. And Rashbag says, Abisvar Lazush Yikosu Eli Yivonis, and the only thing that you're allowed to write Sefer Torah are other than Lashon HaKodesh is in Greek. And the Gemara later on brings the reason, Yaftel Lakim Yefes, the Yishkon Ba'olei Shem. The beauty of Yefes is the Greek language. Now let's remember, when we talk about the Greeks, and the Greeks ruled Eretz Yisrael for 180 years, it's not per se people who ever lived in Greece. Since Alexander died, the Ptolemies lived in Egypt, and the Seleucids are in Antiochia. They probably were never in Greece in their life. But we mean the culture, the Greek culture, in other words, the people who continued the Greek Empire, even though they weren't in Greece per se, that continued for 180 years. The Greek culture was a very overwhelming culture, and look, Chazal mentioned that the Lashon of Greek, the Greek language, Yaftel Kim Yefes, Yafusa Shal Yefes, is the most beautiful language, and therefore it's fit that you can write Sefer Torah. But in the first section over here, Am Rabbi Yehuda, Avkashitir Rabbi Seini Yivonis, Levitir Rabbi Sefer Torah, Mishamaya Maaseh the Talmud HaMelech. Even when Chachamim permitted to use Greek, they only permitted for Sefer Torah, not for any other of the Kisvei Kodesh. And the reason why they allowed it in Greek is because Ma'aseh the Talmud HaMelech, because of the story of Talmai, the Tanya, Ma'aseh the Talmud HaMelech Shekineh Shivim Mushnaim Zekenim Vechnisa Mushim Mushnaim Batu. Talmai took 72 elders and he put them in 72 different rooms, and he didn't tell them why he brought them. V'nichol says Okol Echad Be'echot. He went into each one of them. He told him, I want you to write for me a translation, a Greek translation of the Torah. So they all translated the Torah. Of course they had the same Torah, so it shouldn't be a problem to translate. But there were certain things that they didn't want him to, they didn't want to translate verbatim because it might raise questions, and they changed it. And Hashem gave it, put in their mind that they changed it. Each one of them, of these 72, actually changed it in the same way, which means they wrote the change, they all were mechaven into the same change. Who was this Talmai? So we know from Josephus that this Talmai was none other than Talmai Philadelphus. This king we mentioned, Talmai the Second, was, we mentioned, ruled from the year 285 to 246 BC. So Mishareh suggests that since the relationship between, he was very happy and very amazed at the fact, I'm not going through the whole list, the Gemara over there has a whole list of the things that they changed for him, but at the end he was very impressed. He gets the Sefer Torah from 72 people and they all write the same thing, and because of that he gave them lots of presents and had a lot of respect for the Jews. So Mishareh wants to suggest that the one king who permitted the Jews to mint coins, and the Talmais didn't very often let local governors, whatever, mint their own coinage. Coinage usually showed independence, etc. And the fact that he gave him this privilege could be, is probably this Talmai the Second, Philadelphus, who had respect for the Jews as a result of the whole story of the translation of the Torah. Since we're today is Chodesh Teves, so we'll mention that the whole story took place on the 8th of Teves, And even though Hashem made it that they should all write the same thing, but Hashem was upset that they did it in the first place, and there was darkness in the world for 3 days, from the 8th to the 10th, and the Slichos Vazar B'Teves, we mentioned B'Shmini Bayim Tzani L'Chtov Dasi Vanis. On the 8th, he forced me to write the Torah in Greek, which Hashem was upset. Hashem did not want the translation to start to be translated. Hashem wanted it only to be for Klal Yisrael and not for not for other nations. It's only given for Klal Yisrael. So that's why he that's why there was darkness in the world for 3 days. So that's a coin. That's the next coins that we have. Coins that were minted, local coins. Now let's remember that these coins were actually large coins. In other words, silver coins, drachmas, etc. In other words, large coins, not putot, not bronze putot. I will see that the Jews began minting later. Talmud. Now, as I mentioned, in the year 200 approximately BCE, the Seleucid rule began. That's when Eretz Yisrael was captured. That's when Eretz Yisrael was captured by the Seleucids from the Ptolemies in Egypt, and from then on the Syrian rule. It was captured by a king, Antiochus III, but the one who actually caused the trouble, and because of him we have Hanukkah, is Antiochus IV, otherwise known as Epiphanes. Now, on this website, we don't have that picture, so I'm sorry, I do have a picture, but I don't have one posted now, from the museum in Tel Aviv, a coin minted by Epiphanes himself, which he's shown, the person from Hanukkah. Now, although the story of Hanukkah, the Nes of Hanukkah, takes place in the year 162 BCE, that's when they did the Hanukkah's Beis HaMikdash, that is not considered the beginning of the Hashmonai rule. The Hashmonai was still fighting for 20 years after Hanukkah, and still they were not considered kings. They were fighting against the Greeks the whole time, but they were not considered kings. The first time that they are considered kings is only in the days of one of the last of the brothers of Hashmonaim, Shimon, and then the Seleucid dynasty was falling apart. They were always fighting over who's going to be king. You have Antiochus and Demetrius, and they're always fighting back and forth. Antiochus V versus Demetrius, back and forth. It's an unbelievable zigzag, just to make heads or tails, who's fighting against who. And each of them wants to get support from the Hashmonai army, each of them promising them and giving them more. And it's finally King Antiochus VII who grants autonomy to Shimon, the one of the last brothers. He grants him autonomy. And when he grants him autonomy, that is when, in the book of the Maccabees, it says, this is when the yoke of the Goyim is finished. In other words, that's when the Hashmonai kingdom really begins. That was in the year 142-143 BCE. To quote the Hashmonai book, it says that's when Vayochel Am Yisrael lechtov b'sfarim mishtarot b'shnas achas Hashimon Kohen Hagadol v'sar Tzavah Nasiya Yehudim. That's when they start mentioning the first year of Shimon. In other words, this is the beginning of independence. Until then, they're not independent. So when we count 180 years for the Greeks, it means until the year 142 BCE. And that's when Shimon is indeed the first one who is later on is granted that privilege by the Hashmonai, by the Greek king, by Antiochus VII. He is granted by Demetrius. He is granted the privilege of making coins. It seems that Shimon himself he didn't make coins, even though he had this privilege, but they have yet to find any coins that are minted by him. But it was his son, Yochanan Harkonus, who was the first one to actually mint his coins. Yochanan Harkonus was a very powerful king. He went around capturing sections of Eretz Yisrael that were originally not under Jewish control, including in the south he captured the Edomites, and in the north he captured the Shomronim, and he was the one who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. So we're all told the Hashmonaim only minted bronze coins. They minted bronze coins, and one pruta, two pruta, half a pruta. In other words, it was small coinage. They did not mint the large silver coins. the silver coins, they didn't have the money, and they were only minted later on. The Hashmonai coins, as the Jewish coins later on, are special and unique in the fact they do not have human images on them. Unlike every other coin, as we see over there, the Greek coins and the Egyptian coins and the Persian coins, they all have images on them. The Jewish coins, once again, do not have images. You mentioned Los Asuniti. You're not allowed to have an image of a person. You're not allowed to have an image of human beings on the coins. We even have a person, Nachum Ben Simoy, who never even looked at Tzurta de Zuza. He never even looked at image on the coin. Since time is short, what I want to finish off. We'll talk about the silver coins that were used in that time. Again, the Jews did not mint silver coins till later. In the Gemara, we often have shekel tzuri. Kol shekel ha'amar b'tayra, kol kesef ha'amar b'tayra is tzuri. Any shekel in the Torah is kesef tzuri. What is this kesef tzuri? So archaeology has very good answers for this. And in the city of Tzor, they minted silver coins. And those silver coins were minted throughout the Second Beis Hamikdash. Since the Jews did not have silver coins, the Jews used the shekel tzuri. Why did they consider the shekel tzuri as a valid halachic currency? Because the shekel tzuri, A, was of the proper size, which we'll talk about in a moment, and B, it was from pure silver, as much as possible. We have, for example, in the Gemara, and look over here in the source number 6 on the Hebrew source page, the Gemara says, Hakol nivdim v'kesef v'mishav v'kesef chutz v'nashkolim. You can bring all these things that you have to pay. You don't have to pay all the things listed when you have to pay a knas or whatever. You can pay in any type of currency. You can pay in any commodity. It doesn't have to be a currency. Except for the shkolim. When you bring the machzis, the shekel, to the Beis HaMikdash, there you have to bring the actual shekel coin. You cannot bring any other thing. So the Gemara explains, why Tana chutz min shkolim u'maisev v'arayim. Tana Yav Yosef, what's the reason? Shalaya v'sigal azara. The reason why we say that you have to bring the rayon and the shkolim and all these have got to be, all the rayon is when a person is all the regular. All these things have to be with shkolim and not with other stuff. Shalaya v'sigal azara. You shouldn't bring sigal. What's sigal? Kaspech hayol sigim. Yeshayahu whenever he tells us the slag. In other words, you can have silver that's not pure silver. So if you bring anything else other than the shekel tzuri, you might be bringing silver, not pure silver. And for the Beis HaMikdash, you have to make sure that it's a pure silver. And indeed, Roman coins, one coin which often appears in Chazal in reference to the Romans is the Sella Neronis, the Nero Sella. The Roman coins, as time went on, contained less and less silver and more slag, as time went on. A hoard of coins that was found in Kfar Shilach consisted of Sella Tzuri, Jewish shekels, which we'll talk about in a moment, and one Sella Nironi, one Nironian coin. It was obviously a hoard from the end of the Second Beis Hamikdash, and the Nero coin was had a lot less silver in it than the shekel tzuri and the Jewish coins had. Not surprising. Again, by the Romans, it was a known thing. As time went on, there was less and less silver in the coins, and after a while, they even stopped giving cities permission to mint copper coins because the silver coins weren't worth much more than the copper because they contained very little silver in it. So we have the shekel tzuri. Interesting, Moshe points out that the shekel tzuri, they stopped minting the shekel tzuri many, many years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And nonetheless, in the days of Hardus, for example, who was a very powerful king, we still don't find that he minted any silver coins. All the Jewish coins that were minted until right before the Korban were all copper or bronze. No silver coins, including Hardus. Hardus was a very rich and powerful king. And Mishara says it's kind of inconceivable that a person like Hardus did not have silver coins. So his suggestion is that when the Romans captured the Middle East, eventually they shut down the mint in Tzar, in Tyre. They didn't like the people in Tzar. They shut it down. But in Yerushalayim, they kept on minting underneath, with Roman permission, they kept on minting Tzuri shekels in Yerushalayim, pretty much the same coin. He has a way to identify the difference between the earlier coins and the later coins, but it's clear that this coin continued to serve until about the year 65-66, which was right before the Jewish revolt against the Romans. It's clear that this continued to coin continued to circulate. So he feels that in the days of Hardus, they continued to mint Turi coins in Yerushalayim. The last time that Turi coins circulated in Yerushalayim was the year 65-66. That's the Jewish revolt against the Romans. If you go into that website, Jerusalem Coins, and in the timeline you go into the first Jewish revolt, you go down and you see a nice, beautiful picture of a silver coin, a silver shekel from the Jewish revolt. And with this, carries a fascinating story, and with this we'll end for today. As I said, we'll leave some stuff for next time too. We take a look at this coin. It's not like in the middle of the page, a silver coin. It says on the shekel of Israel, first revolt, 67-68. This coin, on the one side, first of all, you look at the inscription. The inscription is in the ancient Hebrew script. Now, the ancient Hebrew script was used in the first Beis HaMikdash, and the second Beis HaMikdash, they barely used it. But for coins, it seems that this continued on, and even later. On the one hand, you see a three-branch thing, and on the left hand, you see a cup. What is this? So we have a very interesting story over here, and it's printed in the Ramban, Rav Shavel, at the end of his Ezer Bracha, and it tells a story like this. The Ramban tells a story like this. Baruch Hashem, Baruchani Hashem Adko, Shezikisi Vosi L'Akko. Hashem blessed me that I made it to Akko. The Ramban had his famous debate in Spain, and then the king forced him to flee, and in the year 1270 approximately, he makes it to Eretz Yisrael and he lives for 4 or 5 years. So he comes to Akko, and Umatzati Shem Be'azikne Oz Matbech Kesef Mefutach Pituchei Chosam. I find a silver coin that is a nice, very nice image on it. On the one side it looks like an almond branch, and on the other side it's a bowl. And on both sides there's a very nice inscription. And they showed this coin to the Kusim, to the Samaritans, and they were able to read it right away. Because this is the Hebrew script, and as the Gemara Sanhedrin says, that the Kusim still use the ancient Hebrew script. So they were able to read it. And what did they read? On the one side, they read Shekel Hashkalim on the left, and on the right side, Yerushalayim HaKdusha. And what is the image? They say that the image on the right is Aaron's staff, which blossomed almonds in the Mishkan, in Parshas Korach. And on the other side you have the jar of mud. So first of all, the Ramban says it says Shekel Ashkalim. That's not correct. It says Shekel Yisrael. Okay? And on the other side we have Yerushalayim HaKdusha. And today it's commonly believed that these images are not what the Ramban mentions quoting the Kusim. Probably they were contemporary images, not something that was from the Mishkan. So it's commonly believed that on the right we have three pomegranates on a branch, and on the left side is a cup, which probably is some service in the Beis HaMikdash. There are many suggestions. Is it for pouring water? Is it for the Omer? There are a bunch of suggestions what it is. It seems to have something to do with the Beis HaMikdash. What's interesting is that the first thing the Ramban did with these coins was Shekal Nosav Shulchanos. The Ramban went and weighed the coin, and it came out to a certain weight. There's a machlokus between Rashi and the Gaonim. How much the shekel weighs, which is enough kumina today for Peter and Aven, 5 shekels, after how much silver. So the first thing that the Ramban did was that he actually weighed the coin, and then he compared it, and he said, that's Rashi's shita, that's how much a coin's got to weigh, which we'll tell you in a moment what it is. And therefore, he accepts Rashi's shita. And of course, this is the first precedent we have for accepting archaeological evidence in Allah, which is a big debate today. How much weight archaeological evidence has in Allah? But the Ramban over here took the coin, and based on that, he said the weight matches Rashi, etc. Now he later on wants to suggest Lamanu shagay malalo sifalem shtus. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Gemara in Bukharos. So let me tell you, how much does it weigh? The coin itself weighs, I told you the shkolim in the first place, I'm going to weigh 11 something grams or 1122 or 1144, while these coins, these shekels, they weigh 14.2 grams. Now, you say we weigh one or two, maybe there's a mistake, maybe they got worn out. But weighing these and weighing the shekel tzuri, it's clear that this was the weight of the shekel tzuri, 14 something grams. So what happened? How come in the first place HaMikdash, the stone weights weighed less? And the answer is, the Gemara says in Bechoros, that later on they added on a sixth, they added on 20% to the weight of the shekel. And that's what we see over here in archaeology. Clearly, they added on 20%. The first drop more comes out. They add on 20%, and the first measurement was 11-something, and then the second was 14-something. Now, the Ramban wanted to suggest that maybe Rashi's shekel is before the addition of the 20%, and the Gaonim is after. But as we see, we know from the archaeology that the first measurement was even less. So, this is, as Ramban himself says, this is a big siyua. This is a big assist to what Rashi says, that this shekel... Now, when you look at the coin, which is facing us, and you see the picture, it's clearly that this is the coin that the Ramban saw, the cup, the pomegranate, there's no doubt about it, this is the coin the Ramban saw. And this coin, by the way, was not only minted in a full shekel, Shekel Israel, in modern Israel, they minted such a coin with the modern Hebrew script. You also have half shekels, that's sounded clearly chatzi shekel, and quarter shekels also, Raviyah shekel kesef. These were minted during the Jewish revolt. The Jewish revolt is when they revolted against the Romans from the year 65 to about the year 70 when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So these coins, again, match, which teach us, as the Ramban says, the weight, and the Ramban himself was the first one to weigh them and paskan halacha from. Okay, we're going to stop now. We have the Hanukkah candles. Just to mention, but there's a lot more, but we'll save it, lean at it for next time to talk about some other coins, including menorah coins, bar kochba coins. We'll save that, lean at it for next time. Thank you.